Welcome to Day Zero Update for January 18th, 2026. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm General Victorio.
And yeah, we've got a big week of news as everybody decided they needed to lay off people. There's a bunch of that stuff. We got some labor news, issues at Nintendo, and an update on that Rockstar situation.
Yep.
We got some delays, some new games getting announced. One of our Game of the Year games, I think, officially has been taken off the list, because now it's been deemed to be two games instead of one.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of. It's complicated.
Yeah. And then we got a bunch of stuff coming out in the next month or two that look interesting. So, yeah, we'll get to all of that. Before we do that, we'll talk about what we've been playing, and I'll kick it off here. The reason we did not have a show last week is because I was building my new PC. It went longer than I thought it would, so I ended up, I think, finishing it probably an hour after we normally usually record, and at that point I still had things to fiddle with, so it just was not meant to be. Mostly through dumb mistakes I made. I really should have taken a picture of the motherboard before I started taking the cables out. Make sure I knew what would go back in. Which wasn't a huge issue. Just also would have known certain things weren't in there that I thought were. Searched a bunch of boxes for. Did not find until I looked up the manual for the motherboard and realized, oh, that wasn't there in the first place. So, but yeah. Got it working pretty well, so things are pretty good shape. The main game I've been playing to test it out is Euro Truck Simulator 2, a game that did not run great on my previous PC, which I think is partly because it's got very dense environments to navigate at, you know, pretty good speeds, usually up to 60 to 80 kilometers an hour driving around Europe, different places. And with the new PC, like I have an AMD 9060 XT, I think is what I have here, that is pretty good for handling all this stuff. But AMD's specific app they have for managing a lot of the specific bonus things they can do to make games run better, look better, you know, lower lag and all that kind of stuff, is a fairly complicated thing to kind of go through and figure all this stuff out. So I was kind of testing it out. Eventually got it to where it run pretty well at 60 FPS, which is nice. The main issue came when I wanted to stream some of it, and OBS just tanks the frame rate for whatever reason. It might be an OBS issue. It might be some Euro Truck Simulator 2 not being super well optimized for that. I don't know. I still have to do some work on that front, but I have to, you know, actually do some streaming or recording or whatever to figure that out. But for now, that's kind of the big issue there, which I was streaming it yesterday and had it crash toward the end of the stream. Luckily, the video file wasn't corrupted or anything, so I was able to upload what I had, but still, that was a bit annoying. But I've also been playing that because they have a new DLC that came out in November called Nordic Horizons that adds, I think, 41 new cities to Finland, Norway, and Sweden. Which I had to look up the Truck Simulator wiki page to see what all those cities were. I think it's mostly in the northern half of those countries. And it mentions things like there are underwater tunnels to drive through and such. So I'm trying to figure out where the hell that is. I want to drive through some cool environments like that. But so far I've been just driving around. Their event that goes with that needs you to deliver to or from six cities in each of the three countries. And so far, I've been mostly doing Finland. It's just been where the first city they give you to quick travel to when they put out new DLC was in Finland. So I've been doing some traveling around there for the most part. But now I've gotten to down to Vaasa, Finland, I think it is, where I'm about to do a ferry or something towards Sweden to deliver my next thing. That's kind of where I'm at right now. But yeah, I've been enjoying that a lot still. Also, I played a little bit of Gotham Knights and got that running pretty decently. Like some of the problems I've also been having with some of these is they're on my hard drive and not my SSD. So these games are made for, PS5, like that, and Justice. It's the Justice Squad, or Justice League. Like I have that as well, or no, Suicide Squad. Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League. I always forget the name of that game. That are made for PS5s, and trying to play it on an oldish hard drive is probably not great for those. So like Gotham Knights would occasionally hang, usually not in consequential areas, but I've also gotten up to the point in that game where they start allowing you to do co-op play and all that, because you're doing a lot of setup stuff and all that. It just takes a while for a game that isn't all that exciting to begin with. But yeah, that's been the PC adventure so far. I also jumped back into Animal Crossing New Horizons for the first time in a handful of years because they got their big updates and their Switch 2 upgrade, which is only $5. The upgrade is free for everybody, has a ton of big additions to the game. There's if you have a 3-star island or up, there's a new hotel run by Cap'n and his family that has some new stuff to do there. My island is a 1-star island because I mostly focused on improving my house and collecting stuff. So much so that when I came back, I left a lot of stuff on the ground because various reasons. Partly there wasn't much storage for your house to put all your stuff in. Beyond just physical space to put things in, you cannot hold much in your storage. And now they've upgraded that quite a bit, I think up to 9,000 items total, though they don't give you any counter or anything to know how full you are. So you'll just keep adding to it until one day they tell you you're full, and then you have to deal with it from there. But you can do that now, and now crafting, which was a bit of a pain before because you would have to hold the materials in your personal inventory to be able to craft things, and now they can just pull that from your house storage. Now you have a reason to just put all that crap in there instead of leaving it around until you need it. So that is great. A big change. What else? They made a good change where you hold the L button on your, Joy-Cons or the Pro Controller or whatever controller you're using, and it will essentially lock you to a tile space. And if you have, a bunch of weeds or, a bunch of stuff on the ground, and you're trying to pick up specific things, you can use that to essentially kind of sidestep around to these specific spots to pick up things instead of having to specifically angle your character the right way to pick up the right things, which can be good when you have, a bunch of flowers and stuff drops between flowers and such, and you don't want to pull your flowers out of the ground or whatever. That's very useful for that, which is great. And there's a bunch of other things they've added and changed that is good. Stuff that probably should have been added in, 4, 5, 6 years ago, when they were supporting the game versus waiting for when they could sell you some more. So there's that. I did play a little bit of the DLC because I got that at some point and not started up the game yet. And they introduced me to a character and was like, "Oh, there's a hotel stuff you can do here." I'm like, "Oh, is that the cabin stuff? Okay, I can go do that." And then I got went on the plane and dealt with that, and then it was pulled up the title for the Happy Home Paradise DLC, and it's like, oh, I just got hornswoggled into the wrong place. So that was fun to be stuck in that for a bit. But yeah, been enjoying my time returning to this and trying to improve my island and figure out how all that works. But yeah, that's been fun. Let's see, the new game I've been playing is Big Hops. I got my PS5 code from backing it on Kickstarter and have been playing that for a few hours, and I've been enjoying that a good bit. I ran into one weird bug where the once you get out of the intro area, you get a backpack that can hold 4 items in it. Usually, like, you know, sandwiches or rocks or other stuff, whatever you're wanting to have on hand. It would not let me select anything to pull out of it, which is a bummer thing. It's not really a huge deal because, you know, there's plenty of things around to use for whatever you need. So I have not.
Mm-hmm.
I played for a good hour or so after that until I figured out a fix for it, which ended up being going to the options. There's a weird option for analog movement of pulling it out, pulling the backpack out. So you kind of like hold the button down to pull it out, versus just hitting a button and it shows up, and that ended up seemingly fixing it. Though I went on the backer Discord and let the dev know about the bug in the hopes of getting a fix out there. And I think he figured out what the issue probably was. So I hope that is a thing that's solved. There's some little bugs here and there for that kind of stuff. Nothing that's been game break or anything so far. But yeah, that's been a fun 3D platformer where you're playing as this little frog dude who gets pulled into this whole other adventure than what he is kind of planning on at the beginning of the game. And you get kind of pulled into this whole scheme of this potentially evil guy who keeps you going along with the prospect of potentially, you know, sending you back home if you help him out, which is a whole thing. And you go into this place called the Void to get to this next area, and that's kind of a whole fun bit. Think of those segments in, you know, the Ratchet and Clank games where you go on the small spherical planets to jump around on and all that, and it has like the magnetic platforms that you can walk around on, that kind of stuff. That's what that kind of felt like, which was pretty cool to kind of go around in and explore a little bit. And then you get to the first big area, which is this like deserty area where they kind of have a good bit of things to do around. Some little side place to explore. You're trying to find the, or they call like the drips, something like that. Which is the star equivalent of this, or the shine equivalent, kind of big thing you're trying to collect. But they're kind of freeform enough that you're collecting like little drip bits that can combine into a full drip thing that you know, at every, you see a bar that fills up while you're doing it. So
yeah,
that kind of, then you get like the little celebration bit, like a Mario or a Ratchet and Clank or Jack and Daxter would do when they collect their big thing that they're trying to collect.
Yeah.
And the really cool thing about this game is the movement is pretty well done. You get a lot of elements of things like Jack and Daxter, Super Mario Sunshine, maybe a little bit of Breath of the Wild, because you can kind of climb a little bit on walls. And the neat thing is you can eat bugs that give you extra pips for the stamina bar. So if you're climbing up something that your regular bar would not be able to handle, It'll essentially refill it. But it doesn't refill that pip. You have to eat more bugs to refill that, but you can stack up the bugs essentially to have multiple pips. You can kind of get more climbing in through that kind of way, which is pretty well done. There's a really fast way of getting around. It's kind of similar to like the what you can kind of do with the like belly sliding in Super Mario Sunshine. Though I think the way it works is almost a bit like Rocket League, where in Rocket League the if you don't have boost, the way you can get up to full boost speed is you do your forward roll jump 3 times essentially, and you can do that same thing here with sort of a full roll into a roll jump into the slide, into another roll jump, into a slide, into a roll jump, into a slide, get up to like full speed. And they have some race stuff for that, which is tricky because the way it controls is a little bit difficult to get at first. I tried a few times and then gave up for now. I'll probably go back at some point, but yeah, it seems like a big thing is you get these fruits or vegetables, kind of thing that you can throw around to do things. It could also be like seeds to cause vines to sprout out of the ground to give you a place to climb up to higher ledges and such. Though once you get to the first big area, it's the like pepper kind of thing that creates fires. So you can burn down, obstacles that are made out of like brush or something like that. There's a couple cool little areas you can find around that do that kind of stuff. Where it's like, oh, you burn this down to cause the some areas it breaks it entirely, and others it's like it tamps it down for a bit so you can kind of get on top of it as it's coming back out. Kind of a like if you're pushing blocks into a wall to create ledges you can walk on and jump on, that kind of stuff. But with a fire that's spreading, that is pushing it down. It's a little hard to explain without showing you, but it's got some neat stuff going on there. And they introduce like a big, not a kettlebell, more like a slingshot kind of thing that can shoot you around. And the other cool like ability they have is that you can use your tongue to grab onto these like hanging barriers or whatever in the sky that you can essentially like Spider-Man your way off of them. To grab on and then sling yourself away, usually with more speed if you do it right, which works out pretty well and feels really nice. But yeah, where I'm at, I've gotten up to the second like tier of area in that desert area, so I'm still working my way around. But yeah, I've been enjoying that so far, so I am looking forward to put some more time into that. And then let's see, what else have I been playing? Yeah, more Fallout 76. That's just been kind of thing I've been putting on every so often, and just mostly trying to go through the air through the map and find a bunch of places so I can have fast travel points on the map to do things. It's I think once you get like maybe 10 or 15 levels into that game, it starts getting pretty easy. As you have better guns and such, because at a certain point you're never really fearful of losing, running out of ammo. I have a powerful shotgun that's just a dual barrel shotgun that is powerful, and I get more ammo out of it than I use or back. So I think before I returned to it in the last week or so, I had like 1,300 bullets for that thing or 1,300 shells. And I have over 2,000 just from running around and shooting stuff and picking up, whatever raiders or whoever has on their body or is, scattered around in the environment kind of stuff. It's really hard to run out of ammo in a way that I'm just shooting at anything, even at vehicles, because some of them blow up, some don't. And I'm just blowing up stuff because I can, because I've got shells to waste. And I have not swapped away from that gun because it's still, it's a big drop kind of gun, so it's a powerful and pretty reliable, despite being just two barrels. I can take out, you know, ghouls in two shots for the most part, even as much as the reloading animation takes a bit. They don't do much damage. I think the only time I had any real fear of death is when I just got into a situation where a bunch of enemies aggroed and they kind of took me out pretty quickly, but otherwise I didn't really lose much, so I just went my way back, killed a bunch of people again, and got my stuff and got out of there. So yeah, that's kind of what I've been doing. How about you, Brandon? What have you been doing?
Well, as for me, I've been playing a lot of Splatoon 3 mostly, and I'm getting back to, you know, doing it competitive, you know, doing online play mostly. And honestly, I got, you know, one of the things I've really kind of embraced about Splatoon 3 is that it is incredibly unbalanced, like extremely so. And you just kind of have to go in knowing that that's going to be the case a lot of the times. And one of the things I've also come to realize is that Splatoon players have no idea how to coordinate on really anything. Especially when it comes to, like, any of the Anarchy battles where you have to, like, do stuff like the Rainmakers or carrying the, you know, protecting the moving tower, stuff like that. Because you would think that, you know, because the whole idea is like, yeah, I got to take this thing and then I got to bring it over to this thing while trying to not die. You would think at some point a bunch of the players would be like, yeah, so when that happens, we kind of should, like, gather around that person and try to get as much ink on the ground as possible so they can get there as fast as possible. Not really. It's pretty much every man for themselves in that game, but I've come to just embrace it. And I'm slowly getting better at it and kind of realizing that, you know, some of the like bigger, more fancier weapons really aren't worth it. Like, yeah, they'll, you know, be really good at, like, being really flashy, and they'll, like, take out a bunch of characters really quickly. But when you're doing, like, you know, a turf war, it's basically just, you know, that doesn't really matter, because the whole point is you're trying to get as much ink on the ground as possible, and going up against someone, you know, you're a lot of times those particular weapons are completely useless for that kind of thing, really. So I've been playing Splatoon 3. Also been playing more Mortal Kombat 1, not the old one, but the recent one. Been going through the campaign a bit more, and I was liking it up until the point they decided to get the multiverse bullshit involved again, because I was like, for God's sakes, we already did that one time. We can stick with this current one for a while, can't we? But other than that, you know, it's still, like, incredibly fun and entertaining, and I'm loving the fact that, you know, you can, you know, they just, all the features that they've added to that game, from, like, the invasion stuff, which is, like, very sort of board gamey based, to the towers, and, you know, all the other stuff, and just there's a bunch of content in that game, and I'm very much enjoying it. One of the things I've also been playing, last but not least, because, you know, I'm doing Splatoon Online again, that also means, you know, I've got my Nintendo subscription back online. And one of the things, of course, about having the Nintendo subscription is you end up having access to their, you know, their digital library of games for the NES, the SNES, and the Game Boy. And I went to look on there, and I realized they actually have Devil World on there. And I have never actually played Devil World before. Like, I knew what it was. I never actually, like, played it for real, though, because for those who don't know, Devil World is, like, the one Shigeru Miyamoto game that was never officially released over here in the U.S., because Nintendo of America had these really strict regulations about religious iconography in their games. It's the reason why, like, when you play Dragon Quest, you'll find, like, which of course in this case it up until recently was called Dragon Warrior, you'd find like all the like crosses and stuff heavily modified and everything, even though it's supposed to be, that's exactly what it's supposed to look like. But basically, for those of you who don't know what Devil World is, it's it was Shigeru Miyamoto's like first console exclusive game, and it came out in, I think it was in 1984, which was about, a few years after Pac-Man had come out. And when you look at screenshots of this game, you think, oh, this is like a Pac-Man clone, which is kinda, but not really. Mostly because Miyamoto decided to go at this game from a completely different direction than, you know, the classic Pac-Man game is. Because if you remember in the classic Pac-Man, you know, you got the Pac-Man, you got the maze, you got the dots, you eat the dots, you eat the ghosts, you know how it goes. Devil World is different in the fact that, for one thing, the mazes are bigger to an extent than the ones in Pac-Man, but they're also simpler, at least starting out. And also because, unlike in Pac-Man, where you eat the dots and eventually you can eat the big dot and that gets you to get the eat the ghost, the board is like littered with all of these crosses. You actually cannot collect the dots in Devil World until you pick up the cross. And on top of that, the cross also gives you fire-breathing powers, because you're playing like this little dragon dude who, for whatever reason, decides to attack the Devil World for something or some reason. So you actually have like a projectile attack to go up against any of the enemies that come at you instead of just, you know, eating them. Also, what's really, really different compared to Pac-Man is in Pac-Man, the mazes are stationary. But in Devil World, you have this like huge frame that surrounds you. And you got, you know, the devil up at the top, and he's essentially directing what direction this frame is going to start moving. And essentially, the maze sort of rolls underneath it. So on top of that, you have to worry about like getting squished in between, the frame and the walls of the maze and everything. And then there's a second part of it where you then have to collect these four Bibles. I'm guessing that's what those are. And you have to go to like this little area, this like square that has like a skull on it, and it's got these little divots on it, and you have to insert the Bibles into those divots, and that more or less ends the level. And unlike with the dots or the crosses, the Bibles are actually like levitating, and they sort of move with the frame, so you don't have to worry about, you know, having to wait for the frame to go over to another part of the maze before you can get to it. It's just still, they just stick there until you get to them. However, the little skull area does move around, and in fact, the way that the mazes are arranged, it is possible to only be able to see like because the square space itself, the skull space, it actually is like reproduced on other parts of the maze and basically stays the same depending on how many Bibles you put into the little divots. So if the frame ends up moving away from the skull area, you'll find another one. And it's going to be really difficult too, because in that part of the game, the devil starts moving the frame like twice as fast as he does with the original. So it's even more difficult. But as you would expect from an early Nintendo game, it's hard as balls. But, as is also the case with basically all of Shigeru Miyamoto's projects, it's a lot of fun and incredibly addictive, even if it is incredibly silly. But, yeah, that's what I've been playing. So, Dan Reb, what about you?
Yeah, the main game that I've been playing, I've already finished it and have the review up, was Legend of Heroes Trails Beyond the Horizon. This was probably, the biggest release of the year so far. Granted, it's only been 18 days. But yeah, the main thing with this one is that now that this game is out, we are officially caught up with Japan as far as the entire Trails series goes. So there is no game that they have that we don't have, which is obviously awesome. Mm-hmm. And So the thing with this one, though, as opposed to, Trails in the Sky First Chapter, which came out in September, you can't go into this one blind. You have to have played everything here because everything here leads up to what this game is. There are three main protagonists, the main one, of course, being Van Arkwright, who we've seen in the Calvert series so far. And then we also have Rene Schwarzer, who's from the Erebonia arcs that we've seen last generation, the Cold Steel games. And then the other one is Kevin Graham, who we have not seen since Trails into Sky, the third. And that was like years and years ago. So it's the first time we're seeing him in 3D, and it's really awesome seeing like their paths, you know, come together. They don't actually converge. For those of you that have played Trails into Reverie, it's kind of the same thing there, where you're doing like three separate quest lines that eventually all accomplish the same thing. But the main thing here is that you're all in different places of Calvert. So Van's group is primarily going to be in the capital in Edith, and then eventually they end up in Anchorville, which is where Judith lives. So that's the main new thing you see. Reen is actually messing around in Basel, and then also ends up in Longlai, which we've seen in the first Daybreak game. And then Kevin's group we see in Tharbad, as well as the place formerly known as Cray. Obviously, for spoiler reasons, I'm not going to go into deep reasons why they're there. But basically, what's happening in the game is that, first of all, it takes place just a few months after Daybreak 2. And the main thing is that we're seeing the fruit of President Graham Hart's space goals come alive. Like, we're seeing just a whole bunch of rockets being sent into space and all this stuff. And it turns out they're going there for a reason. I'm not going to delve into why, but basically this has all of Calvert in a space frenzy. Everything, I mean, they're all really excited about going to space and things like that. And, like, you know, this is something that I've talked about in the past with these games. Like, technology has really come up extremely quickly. And if you're somebody that played, like, you know, the remake of Trails into Sky, for example, where that took place in Liberal, and, like, that was just a few years back, and that game is, like, super medieval. So seeing things like cars and, like, spaceships is, you know, really insane for its time, but there's actually, like, a reason behind it. And, like, the main thing is they go into Professor Epstein's disciples. These are the people that have really moved forward along orbital technology to what it is now. And it's just really cool seeing all of that come together. So anyway, as far as like what this game does differently from the last few Trails games, it doesn't do a whole lot different. It really just borrows from the rest of the series in order to make things better. Like, for example, Brave Orders from Trails of Cold Steel 3 and 4 are back. So that really allows you to change the tide of battle just by making sure that you have the right Brave Orders set up. One thing that this game does that I really, really like is that in one of the last dungeons, some of the enemies have the ability to take you out of turn-based and force you into action, and vice versa. Like, other enemies can put can turn shards on you and all of a sudden turn it into turn-based versus action. It's a really nice wrinkle that I really really enjoyed, especially like for those of you that like enjoyed the last two Daybreak games, and the last boss was able to do the same thing. Eventually, like, it all comes to a fold where you see who, not necessarily the real villain is, but, like, a lot of the things, or a lot of the questions that you were wondering in regards to Van, have been answered, or have really just gone into a bit more detail. Like, you know, where did Reset come from? Where did Van's Grendel, you know, sort of, like, gain its place? And, like, a lot of this comes from there. Now, the main thing about this game, though, is, and the reason why it leaves me so excited is the fact that this game probably has the most messed up cliffhanger in all of the Trails series. And if you've played a Trails game before, you know that the cliffhangers are, they really, really leave you in really mean places that makes you wonder what's going to happen next. And I've never felt this way since Trails into Sky, where it left us in that cliffhanger. And even the Trails of Cold Steel one, like, to me, like, it's better than both of these. But anyway, like, moving on to things that I wasn't really that awestruck with is they bring back the Marhien Garden. That was one of the reasons why I did not like, I liked Daybreak 2, but I didn't like it as much as the other games. And the reason why was the Marhien Garden. This is pretty much just random procedural dungeons that are set up to really add more to the plot. And then the main thing is that, yes, they do this one better. And the main reason why is because they did a lot of quality of life changes. In the first one, with the or in the previous game with the Marhien Garten, after you finished it, you had the option to redeem your points for what are essentially loot boxes, but you had to like open them one by one. Whereas now, you know, you can open up to 100 at the same time, and you'll get a whole bunch of different items, whether they be things like costumes or gear or ornament, like whatever it may be, and that all really makes it easy. The other thing though is that, as far as plot reasons, it's changed to the Grimgarten because it was taken over by Ouroboros. And we see a lot of what they're planning as far as their next phase. Like, obviously, Ouroboros has been up to something weird since the beginning of the series, but we really start to see a lot of their things come to fruition. We see we're introduced to two more enforcers that we haven't seen before, one of which is actually a content-creating VTuber. She calls herself the Influencer, and the job that they did with her writing and her dialogue is absolutely fantastic. It's definitely going to, you know, probably cause a little bit of a rift between, you know, the older Trails fans, but for what they did, it's clear that the Falcom, or not the Falcom team, but the localization team at NIS America really had a lot of fun with her role. And I'm really excited to see how things continue to move on from there, because, yeah, it was just a whole lot of fun in that regard. But, yeah, the main thing with this game is that I rolled credits at around 75 hours, which you might think is a lot, but actually for a Trails game, that's pretty short. This is actually the shortest Trails game in the Calvert arc so far. And, yeah, again, like, it ended in a cliffhanger, so I'm wondering when the next one comes out, and there's definitely reason to be excited for whenever the next one comes out, so that's cool. The other game I've been playing, Chris mentioned it a little bit, is Big Hops. I think I'm near the end. I've been playing this game for about 6 hours now. A little behind. The reviews were actually due on Monday, but unfortunately I didn't come to it, primarily because I was reviewing Trails. But yeah, like, this game is a whole lot of fun. I talked about it before when I went to GDC last year, but this is an indie game made by a really cool indie team called Luckshot Games. And basically they took what made, you know, games like Super Mario Odyssey really fun. Like, the cool thing about the game is really Hop's movement. Hold on by, it's really just a platformer, but you can do things like dive and do a whole bunch of hacky things with your jumps. And the main thing that this game really does is challenge you as far as how to get from point A to point B. That being said, the tutorial is really, really fun, but I'm struggling through the middle just because, to me, it really isn't obvious where I'm supposed to go. There are definitely things like signs and arrows to point your way forward, but I'm struggling because it's a little bit difficult considering I'm the kind of guy that likes to explore every nook and cranny. And while I am being rewarded for doing that with a whole bunch of bonus levels, it just really hasn't been fun because I just find a lot of the things really delaying my pacing. And as a result, like, I feel like it isn't as fast or as fluid as it could be. That being said, like, they're continuing to make changes, or not really changes, but improvements as we move forward. So I'm not really too worried about not having my review done yet. And I've gotten to a point where, you know, I'm actually really having fun with the game's flow. But it's really all about, you know, just really getting towards the end through your own means. You know, maybe you don't want to explore everything, maybe you don't want to get the platinum, but that's totally okay because there are different things to do. You have these different fruit that you can eat or throw that'll change up the platforming. For example, you have these mushrooms that you can use as trampolines. You have these cactus fruit that can turn into tight ropes as you walk on them. And it's really just all about finding the different ways to use them in order to get to the next part of the level. But anyway, like, as I wrote in my review in progress, one of the other things that I don't like is a lot of the characters in the story are super condescending, which is weird considering, like, Hop is just, like, this chill and happy frog who just wanted to explore things. And, like, they seem to be going for an angle where, you know, it's not really the best thing to leave home, but at the same time, it's like, you want to find some enjoyment in every level you're in, because that's really what platformers are, just really enjoying the environments and getting used to them. But yeah, it's been interesting as I go. It hasn't been as fun as I hoped it would be from the get-go, but it's also all about really finding it as well. And aside from that, been playing some other stuff that I can't talk about just yet. But yeah, it's been pretty busy.
All right.
All right. So yeah, let's get to some subscription news, as we have a new update for the PS Plus game catalog for extra and premium members with a new set of games. Now, some really interesting stuff here. So start here with PS5 and PS4 for Resident Evil Village. So the most recent Resident Evil game, you can start playing it if you have not done so before while you get ready for Requiem next month. So that's one you can check out. And yeah, that looks like that should be cool. Along with that, for PS5 and PS4, Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth, the most recent Like a Dragon game. That is, the second Ichiban game, more RPG stuff. I don't know if it has the big issue that that 7 had, which is the big skill check in, like, chapter 12. Where it's like, if you haven't been fighting constantly, you're going to be there for a while.
Yep.
This one, I think, has more side stuff to do, and I've heard very good things about how much it improves on what the original or the first one did.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. Let's see. For PS5 and PS4, we got Expeditions, a Mudrunner game. This is the sort of scientific expedition kind of Mudrunner game. You're exploring these different environments to set up these whatever science things you're doing, I guess. So that seems like it should be neat. If you need a lower tier game, there's A Quiet Place, The Road Ahead for PS5. This is I think it's a spin-off of the movies, highlighting a unique survivor story after the invasion of dead creatures. So that could be neat. You need something that you probably did not play. Let's see, for PS5 and PS4, there's Darkest Dungeon 2, which is, I've heard good things about this, but it's also not like a substantial improvement or anything over the original. But I do believe it is like 3D environments and characters and such, so a bit of a different vibe to it. So that could be good to check out. And for PS5 and PS4, the Exit 8. This is the, I don't know if it's a Japanese game, but I think it must be a Japanese developer, but it is a sort of a narrative horror game of sorts where you're exploring this underground subway passage that you're instructed to look for anomalies. And if you spot an anomaly, you're supposed to go back to where you came from. And if everything looks okay, you kind of continue on.
Yep.
And you're supposed to do that essentially 8 times to get to the 8th exit and get out of there.
And it gets harder the further you get in.
Yeah. Challenge your ability to memorize the spaces you're in and what changes and all that. So that's supposed to be a pretty good game, but one that's like a couple hours long, depending on how lucky you get.
Yeah.
So there's that. Also for PS5 and PS4, Art of Rally. The very neat-looking, sort of stylized rally racing game from the creator of Absolute Drift. This one seems pretty cool, so I might check that one out. And then last one here, PS5 and PS4, A Little to the Left. This is a really good puzzle game if you are the sort of person that likes the idea of organizational puzzles. Because this features a bunch of puzzles from things you would have around your house to that occasionally a cat shows up to maybe fuck with you while doing them. Well, some of them are simple things like you have the little tray you might have in a kitchen drawer and sorting all your random objects into the spaces and figuring out where they should all go. To having jars with stuff in them and organizing the patterns that they create from one to the next and all that, and a bunch of different little puzzles that are really well done and worth checking out. And I think there's some DLC for that as well. And they also have a daily mode that gives you, I don't think they're randomly generated, but they give you a random puzzle or maybe a couple puzzles a day to solve, and sort of you know, like the some of the daily puzzle stuff that has been big in, you know, the New York Times and all that. So that's one I would definitely recommend out of these. If you want that kind of game. And then for premium, they continue to just have one game here, but they picked a good one, Ridge Racer. For the premium tier. Yeah. Great great arcade racing game, a great launch title for the original PS1. Well worth checking out if you have not, or even if you have, because it's it's a very good game. So yeah, that's your lineup, and yeah, has some cool stuff. So anything here you want to check out, Brandon?
I'm definitely getting Darkest Dungeon 2, because I've been wanting to play that one for a while. Other than that, it's going to be a wait and see.
How about you, Danner?
Yeah, I've actually played a lot of these. I guess the highlight would be the Yakuza game, as well as A Little to the Left. I've been playing that on Switch, but, you know, obviously I probably want to play that on PlayStation now for trophies. But yeah, it's a pretty solid month, but it's stuff that I mostly have already played.
Yeah. I think A Little to the Left is a tough achievement or trophy game, because it has a number of trophies tied into that daily mode. So it's literally going to take X amount of days for that.
Oh, gotcha. Not bad.
Double checking what they have here. Yeah, it's like complete 7 daily tidies is what they call them. 7 consecutive daily tidies, 14 daily tidies. 14 consecutive, 30, 50, 75. Complete all daily tidy bank badge ranks. So, but those, you know, you just check in for 10, 15 minutes a day. Nothing too complicated for that. But yeah, it's a pretty good lineup with some cool stuff to check out. So there you go for that. We do have two events that are happening this week. One, Square Enix is announcing a Life is Strange game on the 20th at 10 a.m. Pacific time, 1 p.m. Eastern time on Tuesday. That is, yeah, they say here, separate the real from the rumor. Join us for the exclusive reveal of the next Life is Strange game. This got spoiled a bit because I think a European rating happened for this game, supposedly called Life is Strange Reunion. That seems to suggest that Chloe is going to somehow come back to life for this, as it seems like they are desperate to find an angle that gets people to buy a bunch of copies of this game. I don't think the last one, Double Exposure, did all that well. Featuring Max, that was very much a fan service kind of thing. So they're trying to find another fan service angle, I guess. We'll have to see what that is in a couple days.
But I am excited to see. I hope it ends up being good, because the last one that they put out was middling at best.
I'm sort of on the same boat. I've only played one chapter of Double Exposure, so I don't know if that one's going to need to be like required play, but yeah, that's kind of made me fallen out of the Max side of the series. I would rather see what happens, like, you know, with like new characters or whatever it may be. But yeah, I don't know about reviving Chloe. You know, in my version of the world, she's dead. So it is what it is.
Yeah. And then we got another event. Xbox is hosting their, I guess, annual Developer Direct in January that is going to feature a few games. Three games they've said here. We'll get a look at two games from Playground Games. First up is Fable. As they say here, they're going to give their first in-depth look at Fable, one of 2026's most anticipated titles, which is presumptuous of them. But yeah, they say, of course, the core themes of Fable will all be there. Choice, consequence, drama, action, British humor, and of course, chickens are reimagined for existing fans and new players alike. So yeah, we'll finally get to see more actual gameplay of that. and see what that looks like. It's going to show off Forza Horizon 6. Saying they're going to share a deep dive on the much anticipated Forza Horizon 6 as the open world racer takes players to the beautiful and contrasting landscapes of Japan. It'll deep dive into a very first look at gameplay, including reveals of new features and how Japan comes to life in a stunning new installment. So we'll see that. That's supposedly out maybe in a few months, at least on Xbox and PC. Mm-hmm. I think the PS5 version will be probably by the end of the year. There's that. And then the last game that they are mentioning here, there's probably a secret fourth game that they're not talking about. But the other game is Beast of Reincarnation, which is the Game Freak action RPG. As they describe, one person, one dog. This is their next gen game that they've been working on with I think 2K. Reveal details of our protagonist Emma's innovative plant manipulation actions and gameplay with her canine companion Ku. This is the one that seems like they got inspiration from some Dark Souls kind of stuff with it. So yeah, I'm curious to see that game. Especially as people very much taken to shit talking Game Freak on their ability to make good looking games based on the Pokemon stuff. And this one seems to be much different on that front, much more modern looking game. So that'll be interesting to see. But yeah, there's rumor that there's going to be a fourth game for this. So we'll have to see how it goes. This will be happening on January 22nd at 10 a.m. Pacific time, 1 p.m. Eastern time. On Thursday.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to this showcase. Last year, a lot of it was Ninja Gaiden, you know, which also ended up being awesome. And then I think the secret game ended up being like Ninja Gaiden 2 Black or Sigma or whatever it may be. So, yeah, I'm always down for a secret. But, you know, aside from that, like, I'm looking forward to this whole thing. Like, I'm really interested in seeing how Fable has changed. Forza Horizon 3 definitely has my interest with Japan being there. And then, yeah, this new Game Freak game looks interesting. Like, we don't know if it'll end up being great, but at the same time, it's good to see something being done. At the same time, it's like, I wish, you know, these were all still Xbox exclusives, because these are all likely coming to PlayStation, but it is what it is. You know, have all three consoles, so it's totally fine. But yeah, like, this is going to be like, what, the first big, or, you know, big-ish showcase of the year. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. I bet Fable and Forza Horizon 6 will be exclusive for a bit. Especially Fable, probably. But yeah, Forza Horizon 6 is supposed to be coming to PS5 later this year. So we'll see. Maybe it'll surprise us. But yeah, there you go for that. Let's get to some games that are coming out in the near future. We have Relooted, which is coming out February 10th on Xbox and PC. This is that, what they call here, African futurist heist game, where you are sort of a crew of people in Africa who are trying to steal back African artifacts from Western museums, which is a very cool concept. We saw that at one of the showcases, I think, last summer. That is out fairly soon, so I'm looking forward to checking this one out. This looks pretty neat. Let's see. We also got on the 17th of February, Aerial Knights Drop Shot is coming out on PS5, Xbox, and PC. I think this is his third game, at least with his name in the title, or his username in the title. Described as a fast-paced first-person shooter, where five characters, you and four enemies are racing to grab the one parachute as you fall from the sky. Be the first to the ground alive. You can shoot at enemies. Doing all that stuff. You're using your finger gun to shoot at them. So that's a nice little touch as well. Looks like there's actual guns as well. Those might be more powerful, I assume, but yeah. That's a neat premise, and I'm Curious to see this one.
Mm-hmm.
It's on PS5, Xbox, and PC. Yeah. There's
Mm-hmm.
one to check out.
Yep.
Let's see. Then we got Avowed is coming to PS5 on February 17th, alongside a
Yep.
big anniversary updates for all platforms. Let's see. The anniversary update adds new game plus a photo mode, a new weapon type, the ability to change appearance in the world, new character presets, and more godlike feature presets. So that's a cool game. I don't know if they're going to let you bring saves over or anything, though I'm still not buying Xbox games, so it'll be a while before I even touch this again anyway. So, but yeah, if you're interested, that's a very cool, probably one of their best RPGs that Obsidian has done in a while. So yeah, there you go for that one. Let's see, we got March 10th for Mr. Sleepy Man. It's coming to PC first, later for the Switch. This is, as it says here, in Mr. Sleepy Man, you play as a sleepy guy who's up way past his bedtime and out of control. Welcome to Bedtime Town, the perfect place to get a good night's sleep. But you're kind of causing chaos and going around as like sandbox 3D platformer kind of thing. That looks really neat. I know we've talked about this a little while ago. But they finally have a date, and this looks still looks pretty cool from the trailer they show here. This looks pretty fun and wacky, so I'm looking forward to that one. That'll be out in about 2 months. Then let's see. Yeah, we got some delays here. The Seven Deadly Sins Origins was supposed to be out probably next week, the 28th. Yeah, and now they've delayed it to March. Citing closed beta test feedback that was far more extensive and in-depth than our development team had anticipated. So it seems like they want to work on some things before they put it out for everybody, which is always good when you can try to fix up some things that people didn't like. So yeah, it's gonna improve controls, combat system, and user interface and user experience stuff. So that's probably good to do. And also getting delayed was Coffee Talk Tokyo, which was supposed to be out March 5th. Will now be going to May 21st. Yeah, they're gonna, yeah, it says it'll allow the team to further polish the experience and make sure everything feels just right when players finally step behind the counter in Tokyo. So yeah, just more time to keep working on it. And yeah, that's your date stuff. So anything you're interested in there, Brandon?
Well, I mean, obviously Coffee Talk Tokyo, that's the one I've been waiting for that for a while, but I kind of figured it would get delayed. Avowed, I wouldn't mind being able to play that again when it comes over. And Drop Shot looks pretty neat too. So yeah, that's about it.
How about you, Dan Rip?
Yeah, I pretty much echo that. Coffee Talk Tokyo is definitely an interesting delay. They moved out of Pokemon Pokopia's place, and I think they would have people double dip there, but it moved to and I think a less crowded spot in May. So I'll definitely have my eyes on that one. I don't know what they'd polish. Like, it's always been about smart writing and just making ideal coffee, and I don't think you can really mess that up. But I'm The delays are hardly ever a bad thing, so I'm definitely looking forward to hoping that one is good as well. Avowed, don't really care for. Relooted, I never heard of until today. Aerial Knights Drop Shot is interesting. They are a small developer that I have followed for quite a bit, and the thing that they specialize is stuff that you can learn in 5 minutes but is hard to master. And this one definitely looks like it's in that same zone as well, so I look forward to trying that out if I have time.
Yeah. So yeah, we got some more news. We got a game called Work, Work, Work announced for PC from Koge Productions and Mojiken Studio. That is the developer of A Space for the Unbound. So this is their new game, which is described as a retro pixel art adventure game where you experience the surreal cycle of work, life, and death. Find clues, gather information, explore the Trigetra Company to discover the truth and find out that maybe there's more meaning in working and living. So basically about capitalism, I guess, and all that. So That's an interesting idea for what they got here, and yeah, the screenshots show some pretty interesting looking gameplay, some cool art. So yeah, that looks really neat. No date on that one, so probably going to be a while yet. But yeah, I guess this is essentially expanding on a game jam prototype they made a few years ago that was called Test Test Test. So that seems pretty neat for people to check out whenever it's ready. And yeah, let's see here. We got some news on the 100-line Last Defense Academy that has been given an update, I guess, that now classifies it as a 1 and 2 pack. Claiming that it is now two games in one. As the 100-line Last Defense Academy depicts the first 100 days of your school life, while the 100-line 2 depicts the 100 days that follow. While the structure has been in the game since its launch in 2025, they're acknowledging that it is a 1 and 2 pack containing the first game and its sequel. So that's a weird thing to announce about a year later.
Yeah, I mean it's a funny marketing beat. Like, Brandon and I have like sort of known this, but it's also like not something they really call out. It's kind of like how I mean, I wouldn't call it the same, but I liken it to it. It's like when Thunderbolts came out and then a week later they said it's like the new Avengers. It's like, yeah, but okay, it doesn't really make it any better or worse than this movie already is, and it's the same case here.
Yeah, it seems like the update they're working on will enable players to start the 100-line 2 without clear data for the 100-line The Last Defense Academy. So you don't
Okay,
need
that's
to, you know,
interesting. Sure.
play through the first half. Yeah, that's starting the sequel unlocks the chapter select feature, which allows players to freely move to the start of any dates or to points before or after branching paths. So you can probably make it a little bit easier to go through all the endings, I guess.
A little bit. There are some serious corollaries to that because the way you get some endings can be a little esoteric, I won't lie.
So yeah, there's that. They're also releasing a soundtrack with 112 tracks via streaming platforms. Should be available now. There's going to be a physical version that has 88 of those tracks selected by the composer. Blue songs not featured in the digital version that are available on April 24th in Japan. So yeah. Seems like they might be doing some more stuff because they're going to have a little what they call the first anniversary class festival to celebrate the game's 1 year since release in Tokyo. So that'll be interesting. Maybe they'll put it on more platforms. I don't know. I feel like they've been like, we're only on Switch and PC, and if we have to go out of business, that's what's going to have to happen. And it's like, boy, that's a bold plan. Instead of putting it out on, PlayStation and Xbox as well. But okay. Speaking of interesting business decisions, with Yakuza Kiwami 3 and Dark Ties coming up, Sega is not delisting Yakuza 3 Remastered. Instead, they're going to remove the option to buy it separately. Unless you, and the only way you can acquire it's once Kiwami 3 launches, which I think is on, when is that? I think the 16th? The 12th, February 12th. You'll only be able to buy it in the series bundle, the complete series bundle that is $129.99 normally. That'll go on sale obviously at times, but yeah, at some point they got rid of the Yakuza 3, 4, 5 remastered bundle that you could buy to just get those games for a decent price. So as they seem to have been doing for the last little bit, they're getting rid of options for different ways you could buy it to just give us the money for the game directly or buy this huge bundle that may have things you already bought. And that's an interesting way to go about things. They put a statement about this because I think part of it is they don't want you to think that there's any that like Kiwami 3 is, everything that's in remastered and more and better in the ways that they want you to think it's better, but they are still going to allow it to be available in that bundle. So at least there's a way to go get it that isn't, going and buying the physical version of the game. Yeah, the physical Yakuza Remastered Collection, which has all three of those on there for $30 normally. So that's the thing you can do as well. But yeah, there's Sega continuing to do weird things with Yakuza, especially because it's a franchise that has a new name now. Because it's like a dragon, but they're still fucking with all these Yakuza games and not changing the names of any of those. So it's just a very weird situation they're in. So there you go. There's your Yakuza update.
Yeah, unfortunately, the community finds themselves in a bit of a crossroads. I am pretty much like one of the new ones because I pretty much got in with Seven or Like a Dragon. And, just seeing a lot of the comments people are making, especially with three. Now, first of all, like, I have no qualms with Sega and RGG saying that, yeah, this will be the new definitive version of three. I totally get that, but whenever you make a new version of something, people are always just going to just go back to the original for whatever reason. And it doesn't really look like Sega is like deterring it. Like, yeah, they are by delisting it, but at the same time, like, there are alternative ways to get that original version. So that's a little weird there. But like, seeing at the Game Awards where, they've announced it wasn't RGG, but it was like that new Yakuza-ish game that's being announced, and it's pretty much being developed the way they would have hoped prior to Ichiban coming out. Yeah, the community is in a weird place, but at the end of the day, it's like this is still a game that I'm pretty excited for, and it's just unfortunate seeing like this kind of rift being being thrown into the.
Yeah. So yeah, there's that. There's even people that want 1 and 2, the PS2 versions, to be released with the subtitles and the original Japanese language voices. I was just like, yeah, that would be cool for preservation's sake, but I doubt they're gonna do that anytime soon. Maybe the next go around when they're trying to update things. I don't know. Just to make it even more confusing. But yeah, that's your Yakuza update. Next up, we have a cool bit of news. GOG has been acquired from CD Projekt by the co-founder of GOG and CD Projekt, Michael Kaczynski. He now has full ownership of GOG.com, and yeah, has said that he is going to keep it going as it has been, and kind of keep that mission going of preserving games and making them available without DRM and all that. So that's cool. I think he's been blogging on occasion as well, expanding on what their plans are and all that. And he said he's not intending to change anything with GOG, so that's cool to see. Because yeah, that'll be interesting to see how they do, because CD Projekt Red's work has been the thing that's buoyed them for the most part, because The Witcher and Cyberpunk have generally done very well enough to make whatever they do with GOG kind of good either way. Did not need to make money on its own, so now it seems like it probably will have to, but I imagine they're going to try to figure out how that's going to go. So we'll see. But yeah, that's kind of a neat news. We can get to the rest of the industry news here, where it's kind of a bummer for a lot of this.
Yep, get ready, folks. Here we go with the layoffs.
Yeah, Meta, as we have suspected, they've spent a lot of money on their VR departments for a long time and have not really gained anything from that. I think the headsets do well, but the games do not match the way that the headset sells. And so they've gone to a point where they have, yeah, they're cutting over 1,000 jobs across the Reality Labs division, who oversees all their VR hardware and development stuff. And yeah, that's involved at least three major studios they have shutting down. There's Twisted Pixel, Sanzaru Games, and Armature Studio. Three studios that have done a lot of cool work over the years. Twisted Pixel kind of being the, I would say, the definitive XBLA developer on the Xbox 360, because they made a handful of games that were really interesting and unique in the way that they did everything there. I mean, the Maw, which was probably their most chill game there. Then they made Explosion Man, which was kind of the game that put them on the map as a really fun and challenging, platformer about a man exploding that is full of fun gags and all that. You pause the game and go to the one screen and you hear the donut song. That's really good. And you get to the end of that game and you get treated to a very fun, FMV sequence that is really well done. Then they made what, Comic Jumper, which is just a game that is about eras of comic history, making a bunch of absurd gameplay sequences to go through with your character, and just a lot of wacky stuff going on there that is pretty fun. And they made Misplosion Man, in the grand tradition of Pac-Man to Miss Pac-Man. They made Misplosion Man, who is her own character that does a lot of fun and wacky stuff on her own, referencing a lot of pop culture stuff and being a really challenging platformer on its own. But yeah, and then kind of from there, the connect happened. They made a essentially a love letter to Mad Dog McCree as a connect game. That's pretty fun. And then kind of the Xbox One happened. I forget what their game was called. Loco Cycle, yeah. Which was not a great game, but it's a fine game. But it's a really interesting game as well, because it's kind of one that was a, I think it was a launch title for that, that was I forget who was in that game. They had an actual actor in that game. It was a game that's, about driving this motorcycle around, that's dragging this guy that was working on it, whose pants get caught in it, and just kind of going through these weird situations and all that. And it's a pretty fun time for that, especially because they were playing around with some of the Xbox One dashboard features there that didn't stick around for very long. Like, they had a challenge where you went to the menus and you hit this button, this that's labeled promise. It was like, oh, I promise, and you saw, complete the challenge. And it's like, it was a challenge that it was supposed to end like 30 years later or something. They probably just said, like, well, how late can we set this? And that ended up being it. But yeah, it's an alright game, but it's got some fun moments to it. But then they just stopped making games after that. They got acquired by Microsoft and then didn't put anything out for, I don't think we ever heard what happened there. They just seemed to be working on something and then had some disagreement with Microsoft at some point and bought themselves out of that arrangement to become independent again. Then kind of worked on things and then didn't really put anything major out. So they just maybe ported some of their older games to other platforms, but then eventually they became a VR developer and got bought up by Meta in 2021, and have been working on some stuff since then. They made the Deadpool game that was announced last year and came out, and that was the last game they put out. And unfortunately, that is their whole story there, which is a shame. They deserve to come out of the Xbox 360 with the ability to do more cool things, and unfortunately just did not work out for them. Sanzaru Games did some really cool stuff on their own. They are the developers of the Sly Cooper collection, then went on to make Sly Cooper 4. Sly Cooper Thieves in Time, which was really good, but just did not seem to sell well enough to keep going on that. They did keep working with Sony for a bit. They made that Bentley's Hack Pack of like minigame stuff. Did the God of War collection and Sly collection for the Vita. Then started working on Sonic Boom. I think one of those games is good and the other one not good. So it kind of ended up being an unfortunate place. And then they started working on VR. Mm-hmm. They made that Tron Endless Runner game that came out on consoles, which is a weird game.
Yeah.
But then they just started working on more VR stuff. I guess they worked on the Spyro Reignited trilogy on Year of the Dragon. And then worked on Asgard's Wrath 1 and 2, which are sort of big tentpole games for the Meta Quest. Did not seem to do that well. Mm. And so they got the axe. And then Armature is their own interesting studio. They were founded by people that worked at Retro Studios. And so they kind of came out of, I think, probably Metroid Prime 3. Yeah. Kind of working on their own stuff. And they worked on porting Metal Gear Solid HD Collection to the Vita. And worked on that Batman Arkham Origins Blackgate sort of Metroid game. That was pretty good, but not great. And worked on more ports of stuff to Injustice Gods Among Us to the Vita, The Unfinished Swan to the PS4 and Vita, Borderlands The Handsome Collection to PS4 and Xbox One. Then they worked on ReCore for Microsoft, one of those early original IP games for the Xbox One that unfortunately didn't really turn out well. Though they got a chance to do like a big update to fix things, and it didn't really change much about the game. They worked on Dead Star, which was like a big multiplayer thing that's, shut down a couple years later. Mm-hmm. It didn't go anywhere. And then he started working on VR stuff. And just kind of got bought up by Microsoft. Or not Microsoft, Meta. And they made the Resident Evil 4 port to Meta Quest 2 that people liked a lot, but not well enough to keep them around. So they ended up getting shut down as well. So, unfortunate end for them. And that's just shows the state of Meta in their VR initiative. They've not shut down everything, obviously. They say they have roughly 15,000 employees, so they're cutting about 1,000 or so of them, maybe up to about 10% of their company. As part of that, Camouflage did not shut down, but they have laid off a large portion of their studio. As is described here, the studio is now reportedly made up of just a handful of employees. Camouflage worked on a bunch of interesting games. They worked on Republic, which was that sort of stealth action adventure game. They also made a VR version of that. That was pretty neat. They worked on the Iron Man VR game for PSVR. That was really well done.
Oh, yeah.
And then made the Batman Arkham Shadow VR game that came out 2 years ago that was really well regarded.
Yep.
Unfortunately, for all that hard work, they've had, most of the studio shut, lay down. And I think all of their projects canceled, and they're, having to start over again working on something new. So, fun times for them, and just kind of makes me annoyed that Meta has become the steward of VR. We're just essentially having an endless amount of money to invest in their division.
Yeah.
But along the way, they signed so many exclusive deals and acquired so many studios that when that investment didn't pay off, tons of those people are losing their jobs, getting their studios shut down, and all that. And those games don't get to experience more availability to people on you know, Steam or even PlayStation and all that. So that's the unfortunate news there out of Meta. Well, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's see. Then we got Ubisoft, who has their own stuff going on. They shut down Ubisoft Halifax. A mobile team that had announced they were unionizing back in December.
Yep.
They claimed they had decided that they were going to be shut down before the unionization stuff happened. So who knows what the reality of that is. I'm sure they will look into that. And I believe the union is negotiating with Ubisoft on the terms of their you know, what are their separation deals are going to be on that. So I've seen stories about them increasing the pay they're going to get or getting laid off and all that. So we'll see where that goes. But they're also looking to lay off 55 people at Massive Entertainment and Ubisoft Stockholm. So that is unfortunate there. Massive, you know, the Division people. I don't know what Stockholm has been working on. They seem to be working on an unannounced new franchise that's using their cloud computing technology. So who knows where that's going. The last story here is they've already laid off 29 people at its Abu Dhabi studio. That happened back in November. That just now came out as a thing. So that's that's also unfortunate. So yeah. More layoffs for Ubisoft. So fun times there.
I mean, that's basically Ubisoft has been going through some serious shit recently, because they've put out dud after dud that just wasn't able to make up the money that they sank into it. And, you know, this formulaic shit's eventually gonna, you know, it's gonna backfire on them, and it already is. And honestly, the leadership needs some serious shaking up at this point, because, I mean, at this point, Ubisoft is just a joke.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little rough. I mean, like, I thought Assassin's Creed Shadows was a really, really good game, but, like, you know, one game is not going to save, it's not going to save them at all. I know a lot of people who are currently working there who are just, like, trying to, like, jump ship, but at the same time, it's like, the industry is just tough. You know, Massive Entertainment. I think they're the ones who worked on Star Wars Outlaws. Like, you know, whatever you want to say about that. Like, I enjoyed that for what it is. But at the end of the day, it's all about the dollar signs, and they're not getting there. And it's tough to see, especially since you know, Guillermo and all of them tried to like get out of being bought by Viacom or whatever it may be. And I don't know. It's just tough. Like we're just like waiting for twiddling thumbs at some point. And then, you know, I didn't comment on it earlier because I wanted to wait until we got through all the layoff stuff. But going back to what Meta is doing, it's just with those companies being shut down too. I don't know if VR is like a thing anymore, because yeah, like the headsets do well, but if the software isn't, what's the point of even supporting it? And that's tough because, you know, obviously, like, out of all the trends, whether they be NFTs, VR, AI, like, VR was obviously, like, the most creative and at the same time, like, least gross of everything there. And that there is innovation you want to see in it. But the innovation had to be in the headsets themselves. Like, you know, when you think about getting someone a Quest for Christmas, you're still thinking about whether or not they're going to use it like 5 months from now. And yeah, that's not ideal. Like you want to go into the territory that Meta has been doing with things like their glasses, which, you know, I think are a pretty cool product, but you know, not the fun stuff that the Quest stuff was. It's just tough to see. I hope VR is not gone, even though like I was one of the first people to like back out of it. But at the same time, like there were some cool ideas. And a lot of the companies that were doing cool ideas are obviously now gone. So it's just rough to see.
Yeah. And like Ubisoft, like Massive Entertainment's one of their top people there, Julian Garrity, has just left for DICE. So he's made a big lateral move to go to a more stable place, though not maybe not that stable, considering they're getting acquired by essentially Saudi Arabia. And who knows where that's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
But that's maybe more stable than Ubisoft. So that's a whole fun place to be. Luckily, there's a number of developers in Sweden. So his options, the options of any of those people there are a little bit better than some of the other places, but maybe for getting, you know, equal or better pay and a better position, that might be the trouble there still. But that's kind of the rough place people are in.
Yep.
But yeah, let's continue on to Nintendo. They're back in all this.
Mm-hmm.
They're facing labor complaints from one or more of its workers. There are new charges accusing Nintendo of violating sections of the National Labor Relations Act, dealing with workers organizing and related union activities. They had this happen a few years ago with a former tester that they apparently settled for about $26,000. These were filed on December 17th and January 6th against both Nintendo and a tech contracting services firm, Tech Systems. They both list the following violations of the NLRA. One for discharge, including layoff and refusal to hire, concerted activities, retaliation, discharge, discipline. And So that is interesting. There's a little more explanation here if you need to see what those are specifically about. We don't really have much of an idea of exactly the nature of what this dispute is over, but not really the first time this has happened to people that were working for Nintendo, either directly or through contracting firms like this. So, not really surprised that it's happened once again. But we'll see if we find out anything about this at some point. May just be something that gets much like the last one that we only just now found out that they settled that for a decent chunk of change. So we'll see if we find out more about this. But there you go. Some Nintendo news there. And on the Rockstar front, we have our first bit of results of the thing here. They went to a preliminary UK employment tribunal that has denied interim pay to the former Rockstar workers who claim they were fired for unionizing. After Rockstar chose to challenge their dismissal in court, the ousted employees have taken legal action against the Rockstar with support from the Independent Workers Union of Great Britain. The spokesperson for the IWGB said the fired workers hope to secure urgently needed relief at the interim hearing while they wait to face their former employer in court. But after a two-day hearing, the employment judge denied that request, saying in all circumstances, the tribunal is unable to conclude that it appears likely that the tribunal will find that the principal reason for the claims dismissal was their membership of the IWGB. Noted that the bar was for securing a favorable interim ruling is higher than it will be at the upcoming full hearing. So maybe they'll get their hoped result at the full hearing. But for now, they have not gotten some help right now. So we'll see where that goes. So far, not great. But I'm sure we'll find out more about that in the near future.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll end here on a fun note. This developer that worked on an indie game called, I think, Hardest?
Yeah,
roguelike card game that very much seems to be taking inspiration from Balatro, that uses AI-generated assets for it.
Yep.
Developer launched it last year and has announced that he is deleting the game from Steam. After his girlfriend that he's been dating for a bit helped him realize it was a disgrace to all game makers to use AI. And so you can find the store page here in the news where he said, this game will be deleted on January 30th. I made this game during the summer in a couple months and thought to use AI because in university there's so much brainwashing on students. And all the tools are given for free so I could generate unlimited images for free and so. But I have realized the AI is not actually free and has a major effect on the economy and the environment. Some AI companies can use this game just existing as a reason to get more investment in for their AI companies that benefits no one, but rather suck resources from the economy, from hardworking people. I coded everything myself so I can in the future make a new game with real assets if I feel like it. But the game existing in its current form is a disgrace to all game makers and players. Ethically, only logical reason is to delete the game from Steam. The girl I've been dating for a month made me realize this. Then thanks her. So, at least I assume that's her name. But yeah, that's a a fun story that he kind of came to this realization because he met, you know, someone he likes, and she was willing to explain to him why this thing he made is not good.
Yeah.
Hey, always good to see somebody learn from their mistakes and be willing to grow.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
All I got to say is good job, girlfriend.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, good for her. So, yeah. I think that is going to be where we end the show. Thank you to Brandon and Danner for joining.
Always.
We got a bunch of more things that'll happen. Yeah, we'll have the developer direct to talk about for next week. As well as whatever this Life is Strange game will be announced. So we got that as well as I'm going to see what games are supposed to be out this week. Oh yeah. Mio Memories in Orbit, Arknights Enfield, that free to play gacha shooter. I think it is. Final Fantasy VII Remake Intergrade on Xbox and Switch 2. Hermit and Pig, that fun little Earthbound looking game. Escape from Ever After. I think that's the main ones I saw. So, yeah, some interesting stuff coming out this week. I'll probably check out Mio. That one has looked good for a while since I played that demo. But yeah. Thank you all for tuning in. If you enjoy the show, for let friends and family know, they should check it out. And select strangers who are always willing to learn from their mistakes, whether from their own you know, learning of new information or others helping them to learn things. So that is always good to see. So, yeah, thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We will see you all next time. Have a good one.
Bye.